In John chapter 7, we find Jesus' life under threat. The Jewish leaders, they're called the Pharisees, and they are on the hunt to silence this teacher. You see, Jesus, he's not like the crowds. He knows their sin. He knows those skeletons that they keep locked away deep in their hearts, where they have pride, anger, and ambition that are crying out for the blood of an innocent man. They just want to shut him up before their sins lie exposed in the streets. The last thing they want is to be found out, caught in the act. And rightfully so, because they have so much to risk. You see, for the Pharisees, their world rests on what other people think of them. Or maybe it's not that simple. Maybe their world rests on what they think of themselves. You see, they have an image to protect. They stand as the beacons of holiness and religious purity. They know the right answers. They know the right way to worship. They know the right way to pray. They know the right way to give their gifts at the altar before God. Do we sometimes become calloused to the needs of others? Do we sometimes care so much about being right, just like the Pharisees, that we forget that to continue in these roles as the champions of religious rightness, the Pharisees would have to kill Jesus? So where is Jesus while the Pharisees plot against him? Jesus doesn't accompany his brothers to the feast in Judea, but instead he sneaks quietly into the city. Among the people, he hears whispers of his name. Jesus, he's a good man. What are you talking about? Jesus is leading the people astray. Jesus, he's crazy. No, Jesus, he's the one we've been waiting for. Can't you tell there's something different about this Jesus? No, Jesus, he's just a guy from Galilee. We know where he comes from. The mention of his name stirs conflict and division among the people. Even these officers that are sent by the Pharisees to arrest him, they return empty-handed, only to say that no one speaks like this man. And the Pharisees, they curse the people. How could they be so ignorant as to believe this madman? Amid all this chaos, the temple is the last place on earth where Jesus should go. The temple is the center of the Jewish community. The temple is the heart of the Pharisees' territory. And his return there could mean his death, because the Pharisees are ready to shed his blood. But Jesus, he goes right to the temple. It's that perfect movie moment where you're begging for the main character. No, wait, don't open that door. We know what's behind that door. But Jesus, he doesn't seem to listen. Why is he risking his life? Can he not just continue teaching in the countryside out of the watchful gaze of his enemies? Surely the people that want to hear Jesus will go find him. Surely they'll go seek him out. Isn't that excuse that we give for not reaching out? Surely the people that really want to know Jesus will come find him. Surely those people will show up on Easter if they really care. Why would we risk tainting ourselves by going to the sick and dying. Why would we risk it? Surely, if they want to know Jesus, they must come with a willing heart. But see, Jesus, he's not fearful of the Pharisees. He knows that his place is among the people. His place is to provide a way for those who don't even know how to begin to help themselves. So he goes. He goes among the people. He is the healer among the sick and dying. So we return again to the temple. Can you picture it? Jesus is there in the outer courtyard teaching the people, when all of a sudden there's a commotion at the back entrance. The farthest away from Jesus shuffle frantically to make way for the interruption. Dust rises, disturbed by the sudden motion. Low whispers give way to cries of frustration as the people trying to hear Jesus only become interested in the rise in activity. Dressed in their full robes, showing their status and authority, the Pharisees are the first to make their presence known. Their march is swift and deliberate as the crowd parts to make a way right to Jesus. Are the Pharisees finally about to make good on their promise to destroy him? But see, the Pharisees are not alone. A woman's weak stumbling follows the Pharisees as she's dragged by a hand around her wrist. She's barely clothed. She's clutching with one hand, desperately trying to cover her skin. Her hair's disheveled. Tears streak down the dirt that's caked on her face. She's silent, her eyes locked on the ground, her lips pressed tight together as she's willing the world to stop. And tears fall fresh from her eyes. Who is this woman? Why did the Pharisees bring her to this holy place while she's in shambles? She isn't the kind of person who should be here. This woman was caught in the act of adultery. There's a flood of shocked expressions and voices as the crowd finally learns the condition of this woman. The Pharisee who spoke, you see, he continues a smirk on his face. Jesus, the law of Moses commanded that we stone such a woman. But what do you say? What do you say? You see, they're right. The Pharisees have not misquoted or misread the law. Such a woman deserves physical death. Such a woman deserves to be stoned by the crowd. Her spirit is already dead. Jesus, just finish her off. She made her choice. Would you be the first to pick up a stone? Maybe that sounds way too harsh and archaic. Would you be the first to just make a comment to your neighbor about her terrible choices and leave the temple with a great story to tell about her misfortune? You'll never guess what she did. Or maybe you just keep silent. Maybe you're thinking, can we just get her out of here? Because this is way too awkward. We came to listen to Jesus. We came because we care about spiritual matters. And what was she doing instead? Can we just get her out of here so we can go back to listening to Jesus and forget this ever happened? Jesus, he bends down and he draws in the sand. And the Pharisees, they continue to ask again and again, Jesus, what should we do with this woman? What is her punishment? What is your judgment? And Jesus doesn't say anything. He just draws in the sand. And the Pharisees, they grow angry and frustrated as he blatantly ignores their question. Jesus, what is her judgment? What is her punishment? What will you say? And then Jesus, he rises from the dust. Now the first among you who is without sin, cast a stone at her. May the first among you who is without sin cast a stone at her. And there's silence until the only sound is the falling of stones one by one. As the Pharisees leave and the crowds leave, until only the woman and Jesus remain. And in the presence of the only one who had the right to cast a stone, the woman looks into the eyes of Jesus. And he doesn't have a stone in his hand. He doesn't have a disdainful look or a cold remark. And he doesn't send her away in shame. He would have been justified. He was the only one without sin among them. The only one who had the right to cast a stone. And instead, Jesus stands with this broken woman only to say, has no one condemned you? She replied, no one, Lord. Neither do I condemn you. Go, and from now on sin no more. Jesus delivers her from death. When we remember this woman, her name always goes with caught in adultery. The woman caught in adultery. Even today, even in your Bible, her name is still tied to her mistake. And there's no outward sign that she was sorry. There's no outward sign that she was wanting to change her ways. Even when face to face with Jesus, her rescuer, she doesn't plead for mercy. She says nothing. She does nothing. Jesus' reaction, his response to her, is not dependent upon her desire to do better or to fix her life, as though she could claw herself up from her own grave. Jesus, before this unfaithful bride, he provides mercy. She should no longer be called the woman caught in adultery, but the woman shown mercy. The woman who lived. even when she deserved to die. In our quest to be identified by our rightness, do we sometimes forget to fall in line with Jesus? We forget to provide mercy to men and women who are dying. We forget to provide mercy to ourselves when we're dying. We pass judgment on people caught in addiction, on people struggling through divorce, on people who know nothing about God. We forget. In this story, we're not just the nameless face in the crowd. We are the woman. We are the Pharisee, both equally guilty of betraying every part of the law. We have anger and hatred in our hearts. We lie and we steal. We put anything and everything above God. We stand as an unfaithful bride before Jesus, the one we betrayed. We need the mercy of Christ when we deserve the stones of judgment. We need the mercy of Christ. And that mercy is so rich because of the blessing that Christ speaks over this woman. He tells her, go. And from now on, sin no more. Go and live a new kind of life. The past does not have to define you. The life spent trying to numb the pain, trying to escape, does not have to be your life. Go and live a new life. I grant you so much more than just mercy, just freedom from judgment. I grant you a life that is abundant, a life with me. Jesus, he saves this woman from physical death and spiritual death. He doesn't just give her back her old life where she spends her days in another man's bed, choked by her shame and her regret. Jesus says, you don't have to go back there. You don't have to live that life. You don't have to live in the filth of your own death. You see, Jesus invites us to resurrection. He calls us to cleanse our souls from the dust of the earth, the stench of decay, and the stain of death. And we leave our grave clothes behind in an empty tomb. The resurrected life, the new way of living, has no room for the things that bring us death. It only has room for the things that make life worth living. A relationship with God, with Jesus, with the Spirit, with each other. It only has room for the things that make life worth living. And the reason we celebrate today on Easter is because Jesus, he didn't just tell us to rise from the dead. He showed us how to do it. He showed us how to embrace new life every day with the assurance that there is no death, not physical or spiritual, that can keep us in the ground. Jesus invites us to resurrection. So will you answer? Knowing that the old way doesn't have to be the only way. Will you answer? Will you choose to live a new life, a resurrected life, an abundant life? Will you choose to go and from now on sin no more? That doesn't have to be your life. Now's the time in our service where we offer an invitation. If you want to answer in any way today, if you'd like to embrace new life with God by being baptized into his death and raised again to walk in new life, then you can do that today. If you want to commit yourself to seeking to follow, you can do that today. If you want to rejoice together, we can do that today. Anything you need, we are here to help you, to love you, knowing that we don't have all the answers. We don't have it all right. We're all just like a woman who Jesus showed great mercy and love to. We're all in the same place. So come, if there's anything you need, knowing that new life is freely offered. Stand with us and we'll sing.